You're listening to a podcast from 702.
702.
The upside of failure.
Sometimes failure is the foundation of greatest success stories.
It's 8 minutes past two, and on Fridays we tend to focus on the stepping stones to success. Failure, because failure is universal to all of us on our journey to the things that we end up succeeding in. But things don't always go right, and it can often provide valuable lessons on our journey to success. So this afternoon we bring you South African founder and entrepreneur of Batu SA, that is Theo Baloyi. Theo's originally born and bred in Pretoria. I think he's from Hammanskraal. And he qualified as an accountant a number of years ago. He went on to work. He stayed in corporate for about 5 years. He was at PwC working in South Africa and in the Middle East, being based in Dubai. And that's when he decided to go back to his entrepreneurial roots. He saw a gap as far as a South African sneaker brand that in the market, it was sorely lacking. South Africans love their sneakers. They love to look good. But what about a homegrown brand? And so he got to work. He launched his Batu shoes from a tiny room in Alexandra. He sold out. There was absolute pandemonium. He came out with the first 100, sold those out, came out with another batch of about 400 or 500, and he sold those out. And the business grew from there. He made a name, and the shoe brand grew from there. Now he has his own warehouse in Centurion. He employs a number of people, 80% of them coming from Alexandra. And he has corporatized this business that continues to expand and has flagship stores and other retailers carrying the brand across the country. So, it hasn't been an easy road. It's been a road filled with hard work, from what I can tell, and what has been happening in between the wonderful success milestones. Theo, thank you so much for joining us. How are you doing?
Thank you for the invite, Azar. I'm great. And how are you doing?
I'm very good. Thank you. You started the brand in 2015. I must say, I've been watching your progress. I follow you on all platforms, you name it, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, following your journey. Wonderful to see how you've just expanded, how you've grown as Batu South Africa.
Thank you. And obviously, like you've mentioned, it hasn't been an easy journey, and that couldn't have been possible without, you know, our forever hardworking team, and most importantly, our esteemed clients that have supported the brand, you know, from a room in Alex to where we are today.
Yes. I remember reading a piece about where you were interviewed last year. It was at the start of the year, and you said that by the middle of the year, you wanted to employ 100 people. You wanted to have 100 people on your payroll by June 2020, and you had moved into new offices. You acquired new storage space for your product. But the pandemic struck. Were you able to reach that goal?
Yeah, obviously. The pandemic happened. That post went on, I think it was early in the year last year, around Feb, just before, you know, lockdown, you know, and then obviously the pandemic happened, you know, it slowed down our progress because we took some time to move into our headquarters. And fortunately is that eventually we managed to employ about, you know, 100 plus people, you know, by end of last year.
Oh, fantastic. So it might not have been by June, but you did it by the end of the year.
100%, yes.
Oh, that's amazing. So, like I said, you're one of those entrepreneurs that I think many can learn from, because your sense of hustle is just, and your commitment, you know, because sometimes hustle has these negative connotations, but it's actually an ability to be able to make things happen, to make things keep moving forward, to keep them moving forward, for them to have this forward momentum all the time. And it's something that you seem quite skilled in. You're very adept in that. Would you agree that it's one of the important ingredients?
Yeah, I think highly important, because, I mean, I think number one, you need to be intentional about what you want to do, you know, and I think entrepreneurship is more than, for me, what I believe in. It's a calling more than anything, because even in favorable times or unfavorable times, you will be able to, you know, hold the steering wheel very tight, you know, and build. You really need to have, I think, you know, the guts and the values to really, you know, keep going, even in in times when trade is not so favorable. And I think for me, because, you know, I started from humble beginnings with the business and I was very intentional, and I've sacrificed so much and I've reinvested so much in starting the business, you know, I literally leave my bread, you know, and, you know, even in times when, you know, things are not going the right way, I just keep on going. And I think it's something that, you know, each and every person needs to have in them, you know, just have clear intentions and just keep going.
What values do you live by? What are your values?
There's quite a lot, but I think, you know, for me, I think, you know, just being authentic to your core. And the reason why I'm saying that is because with me, I always say this, that I was so authentic with Batu and what I wanted to do with it, that I actually left one job that only provided for me and my family and started a business that, you know, provided for 230 families, because we employ about 230 people now in the business. And I think for me, one value that carries me through, you know, favorable and unfavorable times, is just being authentic in what I do. You know, I never really try to replicate anything or do something for the wrong reasons or for the wrong intentions. I really look inside within and try to remain authentic, you know, irrespective of who does what and how they do it. I just want to be authentic and really, you know, commit to the mission that we have in the business to reignite hope and create sustainable jobs. Mm-hmm. And I believe that you can't be a leader if you're not authentic. So I think one value that I take from that is just being authentic and obviously being humble. I mean, I come from Alex, you know, Ruman and Alex when I started the business, and I am because of the people. So just being authentic and remaining humble in whatever that I go through, you know.
And when you talk about the people, they really did help with getting you started. You saw a gap. You approached a guy who used to stock things like cravats, pocket squares, cufflinks, and so on. And you and your friend decided to sell those on to you know, in different sites. So sales from early on, seeing an opportunity from early on, and these were your customers, the same people who bought your perfumes later, the same people who made sure that your first batch of your mesh sneaker was completely sold out.
Yeah, and that's why I always, you know, for me, you know, because I believe that we as a people can do so much if we support each other, you know, mm-hmm. with unity. You know, I'm the product of people's support. You know, like you said, when I was doing my undergrad, I used to sell perfumes door to door in Alex, and people supported me, you know. And for me to even get a, you know, 100% bursary, you know, it's because someone believed in me to give me, you know, that opportunity to study. Even when I got to PwC, someone believed in me and gave me an opportunity to go work overseas. You know, and when I was there and I was now tapping into this world, I thought about the people that, you know, walked this journey with me. And that's why I decided to leave my corporate job and go back to the people and build with the people, because, you know, it's because of the people that we are who we are and our business are what they are today, you know.
Yes. Where's your bestie, Andrew Lale? Because you never tell your journey, the story of your journey, without mentioning him.
He actually works with us in the business, you know. Wow. He's our head of operations. Yeah, I was with him during lunch just now. Yeah.
That's good to hear that you're coming up together, you know. So good to hear.
Yeah, curious, yeah.
Where's Andrew in the success in this picture? So how long did you sit with the idea? I mean, there's a difference between prototypes and creating different models, different versions or iterations of your product, right? That's a different phase altogether. That's you working on it. But like sitting and stewing with it to think, could it work? Hate this idea, because ideas somehow they sit, they camp with us, but if we don't do anything about them, it's like they move on and you look up and you see somebody else having done it. Did you sit with it for long?
Yeah, not for that long. The thing is this, you know, like I always say this, I think this was a calling more than anything, because I was employed, you know, obviously caught in between multiple projects at work, you know, but it was just that idea that never left me, you know. When I wake up, when I'm taking a shower, when I'm traveling, it just keeps on coming back. And even worse, when I come, you know, visit home in South Africa and go to Alex, you know, it keeps on barking me, you know, it just never left me. And then I just decided to get to work from then. And that's why I believed in so much that I even took all my, you know, my savings, you know, and invested in the business. So I think I didn't stay I kept on working on it, you know, on weekends after work. Sometimes I stay behind for long at the office and just work on the Bounty idea, because you can think about it. I'm just an accountant. I didn't even know anything about retail. Mm-hmm. And even in the building blocks of our business, we don't have any blueprint or any point of reference, you know. So I did a lot of work, you know, in getting it done, and I started immediately.
You made several, you designed your shoe. You had a sense of what you wanted it to look like, but you weren't met with eager producers out there. Take me through just the journey of finally getting your shoes produced.
Yeah. So I did about 18 months of research and development, proof of concept, you know, quality controls, quality testing, and just researching the sneaker industry in the world. And after that, you know, I had to go now find a factory. And the idea was that I didn't want to be just to build a shoe brand and be like any other person. So what inspired the Mesh Edition was that, you know, the colorful socks trend that was happening in 2015.
Yes.
And I wanted to build a happy shoe, you know, colorful shoe, and build out of mesh. So the manufacturers, footwear manufacturers, and the factory that I was communicating with, they never believed that you can build an entire shoe out of mesh, because in manufacturing or in footwear manufacturing, mesh is used as a component of the shoe, either on top, on the side, or at the back of the shoe. So I had an idea of building an entire shoe with mesh, and that's why, you know, they declined me, until one day I just flew down to Durban and met with the factory owner, you know, and from that, because, you know, I announced without a meeting or an appointment, mm-hmm. they realized how, you know, important this is to me and how much I believe in it. And that's how I got a green light. Other than that, I don't think they would have, you know, given me a shot. But they gave me a shot, even though, you know, I didn't meet the minimum order quantity or anything. You know, they just believed, they could see the fire in my eyes, and I think, you know, how passionate I was about this business. And they gave me a shot. And today they don't miss my calls, because I'm one of their biggest clients.
Yeah. So many times were you rejected before that?
About 13 times.
Mm-hmm. And you just kept believing, kept going. I'll tell you why, because I know I have another.
I just kept going.
Yeah, I have a friend as well who tried to make shoes some time back, and they really struggled. They were with what factories or producers in terms of volumes, what they wanted to make. Number one, the numbers that they could afford to make. But also in terms of quality, they didn't find that we had really great quality shoe manufacturers. And so when you came along and you made this quality sneaker that is super comfortable, it is one of the most comfortable shoes I have in my cupboard, along with the sandals from Ifele.
Thank you.
They're right up there with the Ifele sandals as far as comfort is concerned, and both local, you know. And so for me, it suggests that something happened in that manufacturing space. Maybe they decided to open up to give opportunities to local brands instead of producing, say, higher volumes for export, for instance. What have been the challenges in shoe manufacturing in South Africa?
Shoe, there's a lot. As you may know now, that generally the textile industry in South Africa, has basically seen difficult times, hasn't been doing so well. You know, we've suffered a lot in that, I think, textile industry, and the craftsmanship in South Africa, it's not up to par with the world. So, for instance, with, you know, our mesh edition and with my, you know, proof of concept, we did about 21 samples of the mesh edition. And the reason for that was because, you know, sample number 8, sample number 9, sample number 14 was not of great quality as to where I wanted to be, where I wanted this the quality to be, you know. So we had to do a lot of research and try to get the right sneaker technology onto, you know, into the plant and so forth. And also the molds as well, you know, getting the molds and all of that, it's a bit of a challenge. So the craftsmanship in South Africa when it comes to footwear manufacturing, you know, we still have a long way to go. And, you know, this is where we need, like, you know, public and private players to come on board and to really help us survive, you know, the industry, you know, the textile industry, because, you know, we really need to play catch up, especially with us urban brands, because you can think about it. We are urban brands, emerging businesses. We want to be cool. We want to be innovative. But where do we get the sneaker technology to compete with the East? You know, where do we get, you know, all of these, you know, manufacturers to compete with the East? I mean, in South Africa alone, when it comes to footwear, I doubt that we can mention even 40 factories. But you go to the East, they've got hundreds and hundreds of them. So how do we compete, you know, as local manufacturers with the rest of the world? And I think that's something that is bigger than all of us. We need the public sector. We need the government to play a part in there. We need the private sector to play in there and so forth. You know, so it has been a journey. So when you talk about a friend, I really understand, because, like I said, I did about 21 samples because, you know, the quality was not of great with the other samples that I've done.
You don't want to choose Serasang, but Rexa di Rasa. You know, we don't want those walking down the street and your shoes busy making noise. So it's good that you could get to that quality that you were looking for. Did you ever think of going to the East, considering how challenging that period was?
It was quite ironic with me. I think I had, I think quite fortunate with me is that in as much as, you know, I consider going to the East, but I really and wanted to remain truly, you know, a South African brand. And I was very fortunate in a sense that obviously, you know, post my meeting with the factory, you know, they were very supportive in a sense of, you know, trying to make it happen, you know, locally as well. You know, and this is a factory that had over, I think, 50 years of, you know, trade in South Africa as well in manufacturing. So I was fortunate in that regard. But, you know, I must be quite honest that, you know, at some point I really thought about, you know, going to the East because it was probably the easiest way out, you know. But the thing with that, with the new idea going to the East, you don't know where it will land, you know. If you go to the East and then they replicate, you know, they replicate that all over Asia, you know, it might be too dangerous. And it's one thing to go to the East with an existing brand, but with a new brand, with a cool, you know, with a new set of design, it's very risky. So I refrain from doing that because, you know, obviously the risk management processes and analysis that I've done around, you know, a footwear manufacturing to say I can lose the identity and the trademark of all of this, you know?
Well, one of the areas that you cited for our conversation in your journey, you said that coming out as a local brand and trying to position the brand in the market wasn't easy. You had a number of failures in the process to where the brand is and getting it to being accepted and as a quality brand. What was that road like? And because that speaks to doing the consumer work, consumer education, consumer acceptance, which isn't easy. You know, we have greater forgiveness and acceptance of overseas brands than we do for our own homegrown brands or even brands from this continent.
Yeah. So for me, it was not an easy journey because, I mean, in one of when I did about 8 years of research and development, one of the things that I studied was the South African consumer, you know, whom is very, I think, at the time, you know, people were deeming local, anything that was made local as not of great quality, you know, and the expectation was that it has to be sold at a lower price, right? So fortunate enough for me is that I got the right brand advocates, you know, to educate my clients, you know, to support my business, you know, and I had people on the ground, you know, that were advocating for the business. I'm talking about a Thabo who just bought a pair, you know, was a bit hesitant, but bought it and enjoyed the quality and told the next guy, and the next guy told the next guy at that level on the market. Then what I did, because influencer marketing was the thing at the time around 2015, I got the right people, you know, like your influencers or celebrities to advocate for not only our product, but our brand story and our brand promise and our vision, what we stand for, the likes of Somizi, your DJs Boo, you know, your Benny McCarthy, many others who went on with the large following that they've got on social media, day in, day out, advocating for this, you know, dream of a proudly South African sneaker brand. And that helped a lot because people trust, you know, and that's why it's called influencer marketing, because people really trust the influence that comes with that and the decisions that our celebrities make, you know. So that helped a lot in terms of educating our clients. And the more that happened, the more customers came and the more we had return clients, because someone will buy one pair and come back for four more. And because someone bought four more, will tell the next person will buy, you know, 10 more, you know. So that really helped a lot in terms of positioning the brand. But it was very challenging at the beginning because you can imagine I'm walking into rooms, I'm talking about a brand that people don't know. On top of that, I'm talking about a different product, you know, a different sneaker that is built out of mesh with colors. So there was a lot of questioning. But because I've done, you know, my checks from how I communicate the brand, from the quality of the shoe, I think over time I got away with it and I won people over, you know, and that worked for me. But it wasn't easy journey.
Yeah.
So I use different dynamics and different mechanics to change and to move the perception.
Yeah, so adapting as you go along. So those are the business areas where you feel there've been elements of failure in between the times of success. But being an entrepreneurship, being an entrepreneur rather, is personally can be very taxing, can be quite challenging in terms of the balance, as we talk about the work-life balance. But yes, I think now we're much wiser to say that it does not exist. It's simply about the priority, what is of priority right now, what is in front of you right now. What would you say has been a failure on a personal side?
Sure. I think, you know, as a person...
Oh, we don't say sure, you know, because you are in the business of shoes. You like shoe.
Exactly. So I think, you know, obviously coming from LX, you know, sometimes, you know, you evolving into this entrepreneur and this business person, also, you know, you're trying to build a business and corporatize it, you know. And oftentimes we come from communities where, you know, we had successful businesses that traded in townships, but they never scaled to be, you know, global or anything beyond South African borders. So having built a business from the township and trying to evolve it and try to grow it, people, you know, tend to see you for who they know you to be and see your business for what it used to be, you know, and they want to see in that lens. They don't want to change, you know, and understand that you are evolving and things are different now, you know. So that has been always a challenge to always try to, you know, balance the two, you know, and strike a balance in a sense that, you know, I can still reach to the people, and even though that, you know, we are growing this business, but I can still go back to the people and connect with the people, you know.
So there have been times when you haven't stayed close to the roots that you came from.
To the roots. Yes, because of obviously work and business requires so much of you.
Yeah. So what's the best financial advice you've ever received?
True. quite a lot, but I think the best one that I've received and I think worked for me is that reinvesting in, you know, components of your value chain that works for you. You know, you need to be able to know what is it that you can carry in your value chain.
Yeah.
And what is it that you can afford to outsource rather instead of making it your own, you know? So making that distinction between that, you know, really helped me a lot in terms of I think managing my cash flow. And then obviously, and this is very important, and I know a lot of people hear it all the time, but the business money is not your money. Honestly, it's really not your money, you know? And you need to be able to distinguish between the two. What is Theo's money? Is the business money, you know? Or the value of. So, yeah.
Right. To make sure that you're not dipping into money that's not yours, that really is for the life of the business. So as we wrap, you know, following your story, you've said that you don't like comfort, that you love a challenge. What is it that you're restless about now? What are you restless about now?
When we just got, I don't mean to name drop, but we just got, we made it to the top 25 most admired African brands, and ranking number 10 on the list, you know, over, you know, 28 countries in Africa, 80,000 brand mentions and 3,500, you know, unique brands. And this brand from LX is sitting, you know, confidently on number 10.
Yeah.
And for me, that's what sort of, you know, on my mind to say, how do we take it to the next level and build for the world from there, you know? So that's what's on my mind at the moment.
Yes, moving from a sneaker brand to a shoe brand. Theo, it's been wonderful. It's been really lovely to chat to you and really see all the areas of hard work that's gone into doing this work. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Zania. Thank you for the invite. Appreciate it.
That is the founder of Batu Shoes, entrepreneur Theo Baloyi.